Behind the Arc. A look around the country in college basketball. Behind the Arc. Hear about the week's biggest storylines, from blue bloods to mid-majors. Go in depth on the week's biggest matchups, bracketology, and which small conference schools should be on your radar. Behind the Arc. Here's your host, Joel Silverberg.
It is the Behind the Arc podcast. I'm Joel Silverberg. Thank you so much for checking out the Behind the Arc podcast, whether it's on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, 99.1thesportsanimal.com, or on the Sports Animal app powered by Big Kahuna Wings, the wings that changed it all. Thank you so much for checking out Behind the Arc. Remember, you can leave a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. You can hit that subscribe button and tell college basketball fans that you know about it, so that way we can spread the word about the Behind the Arc podcast. Thank you so much for taking time to listen. So Tennessee got another commitment for the class of 2021 as 4-star wing Jemai Meshack committed to Tennessee on Tuesday. So a big get for the Volunteers as they get their second top 50 prospect for the class of 2021. Grant Ramey of GoVols 24/7 will join me in the next segment to talk about that. And the ACC coaches have proposed that every team in Division I basketball should go to the men's NCAA tournament this upcoming season. Goodness, I'll talk to Grant about that as well, but just a wild proposal and what would be a wild situation. And I'm sure if you're listening right now, you have your own thoughts on that, good or bad, or both, all over the place, as the college basketball season appears to be headed towards a seemingly way of insanity as we get closer and closer to what we are hoping is the 2020-2021 college basketball season. There seems to be more confidence that the season could be happening this year, and at least an NCAA tournament to some degree, simply because you've seen the names in college basketball that have spoken out about it. Coach K saying we need to have a tournament, and certainly you can't miss that event 2 years in a row after it got canceled this past March. And for college basketball to lose out on the NCAA tournament a second year in a row would be devastating. And so hopefully you don't see that event canceled again, which means you have to have a season before you can have a tournament. Or in the ACC's case, you just have a tournament involving every Division I team, all 350-something of them. But Jemai Meshack for Tennessee commits to the Volunteers. He is Tennessee's second commitment from the class of 2021. Tennessee now with a top 20 recruiting class. And again, just two commitments, but a 5-star and a 4-star. It's a strong two commitments, and the Volunteers aren't done yet. They'll continue to go after big men in the class. I'll talk to Grant Ramey about the specifics of that later on in this podcast. And of course, Paolo Banchero is off the board as he's committed to Duke. It was a little surprising that he committed as early as he did. But Tennessee getting a 6'5", 190-pound small forward in Jemai Meshack is a really nice get for Tennessee. 4-star guy, which it's funny, and I've talked about Corey Walker before, that maybe Corey Walker should be getting a little bit more attention, but he isn't because he happens to be a 4-star commit in the same class as 2 5-star guys. But when DJ Burns was the first 4-star commitment in the Rick Barnes tenure to commit to Tennessee, it was a really big deal. Lo and behold, Burns never played a game for the Volunteers. He redshirted his first year, then transferred to Winthrop, where he was a starter this past season. But for Tennessee, you have 2 5-star guys in Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer. Corey Walker's not getting talked about. And so now you get a 4-star guy in Jemai Meshack, who's one of the top 50 players in the country for the class of 2021. He's the number 3 overall recruit out of the state of California. Really liked what he got out of Tennessee, and due to some injuries earlier in his high school career, his recruitment kind of picked up late, but it took off out in California, and then the rest of the country took notice. And Tennessee, even the Volunteers, got in a little bit late on the recruitment, but he ended up committing to Tennessee, and now he's going to join Kennedy Chandler in the class of 2021, and that's a really, really big-time get for Rick Barnes, and this recruiting success just seems to continue. You go from having a 4-star player in DJ Burns, okay, and it's a team full of 3-stars, and so Burns doesn't need to play, ends up transferring, it didn't work out, but you get a 4-star commitment. So that raises some eyebrows. Then the following year, Josiah Jordan James is a 5-star guy, the first 5-star in a while for Tennessee. Then you follow that up with a pair of 5-star players in Johnson and Springer, and you add a four-star into that mix. Then you look at what's happening this year, and you already have a five-star and a four-star, and Tennessee could be on its way to back-to-back top 10 recruiting classes after what it did a year ago. Now, obviously, sitting at 19 right now, some work to do, but again, just two commitments with the talent that Tennessee is going to be losing after this upcoming season. The Vols are going to be going after big men. EJ Anasicki is a grad transfer who will only be here for a year. Eve Pons and John Fulkerson, Tennessee's returning front court duo. Those guys are both going to be gone after this upcoming season. So Tennessee has to address some needs in the front court to avoid having to go through another rebuilding season. Now, the hope is that Tennessee will be able to do that. Jabari Smith has been somebody that's been in conversation about that's been on Tennessee's list and one of Tennessee's big targets, and it's not going to stop there. They are going to continue to go after front court players to help replenish the loss of some of the front court guys that Tennessee is going to lose this upcoming season. Then you're going to need Olivier Comwa and guys like Drew Pember to step up in a bigger role after this season. But for the upcoming year, Tennessee looks really, really good and looks really loaded. And we've talked a lot on this podcast, and the rest of the country, I think, has taken note that Tennessee is going to be very deep with all the returning players they have, and Eve Pons electing earlier last month to come back to Tennessee. So for the upcoming class, it's simply a matter of, do you keep everything in line to be relatively seamless from transferring from one group of player personnel to the next? And that's what Tennessee is going to find out throughout the course of the 2020-2021 recruiting cycle. But this is a very nice commitment for Tennessee to get a top 50 four-star wing out of California, a guy that is willing to cut to the basket, can play well defensively, especially on the perimeter. I think that's something that Tennessee could continue to improve in. And I think when you have somebody like Eve Pons that's so elite defensively and can play that wing spot, but he's usually going to play the four for Tennessee, having someone like Jemai Meshack, who is more likely to play the three, I would say, could have a lot of potential at being a really good defender in the SEC and help the Volunteers a lot, especially on the defensive side of the court. And we'll talk more with Grant Ramey about that in the next segment. But a nice get for Tennessee. Kennedy Chandler, the top point guard in the class of 2021, the five-star originally from Memphis, is going to play his high school ball in Kansas this upcoming season. And then, of course, Jemai Meshack, who is a four-star small forward out of California, that is going to join Chandler for the class of 2021. He sneaks just inside the top 50 for this class, but a four-star guy that adds another impressive commitment for Rick Barnes in Tennessee and his staff since he has arrived in Knoxville. And you're talking 3 years in a row where you've had five-star guys, you add some four-stars into the mix. Tennessee's going to continue to recruit at a high level as long as Rick Barnes is there. And as long as that's happening, Tennessee may not have to have many rebuilding seasons for the rest of the Rick Barnes tenure if he can keep this up consistently. I'll talk to Grant Ramey in the next segment. You'll hear from him his thoughts about Jemai Meshack, what the Tennessee coaching staff is doing that makes them so successful on the recruiting trail, and plus, what does Meshack's game look like? How does it fit into Tennessee's scheme? That and a lot more for the upcoming college basketball season as you listen to the Behind the Arc podcast. Really pleased now to be joined by Grant Ramey of GoVols 24/7, who is joining me now. And Grant, we'll get right into it. Jemai Meshack committing to Tennessee. Really big commitment for Tennessee, getting a top 50 recruited. And just what do you know about his recruitment, what Rick Barnes was pursuing him? And from what we've heard so far, it sounds like Tennessee kind of got into the game a little bit late with him.
Yeah, everybody was a little bit of a late riser. 2 years ago, he had a foot injury that kind of held him out of the AAU basketball summer travel circuit a little bit. That's a big evaluation period, obviously, for basketball players. And then this spring and summer, there was no evaluation periods because of the coronavirus shutdown. So everybody was a little bit late to the party with him. He's a little bit of a late riser because of kind of the circumstances in his recruitment. But he was on Tennessee's radar back in April. They started recruiting him from there. They offered him in late June, and they made up a lot of ground really quickly in that recruitment. He's a really good player. He climbed, I think, 22 spots in our last 247 Sports ratings update. So he's a guy that's on the rise, and Tennessee got in at a good time and obviously did a pretty good job recruiting because they got his commitment after a pretty short period of time.
What does that do for Tennessee as a whole right now? I know they've got two commitments in the class of 2021, but what does this say about Rick Barnes and what he's been able to do on the recruiting trail as he continues to have success now, the third class in a row where he's had some really high-level recruits?
Yeah, I think it's just a sign that Tennessee's recruiting at a different level than it's probably ever recruited, at least consistently, across multiple classes. They can go across the United States to California and get a top 50 player that they really didn't start recruiting until only a few months ago. They can kind of show up, have a name brand, have recruits, prospects know kind of what your program stands for, what kind of culture your program has, the success it's had, the stuff that makes it good, the player development, everything, the pieces of the puzzle they put together here. I think it shows just at what kind of level they're recruiting at. Everybody in recruiting says, good players want to play with good players. I think people are starting to, or at least these kids are starting to take notice that Tennessee basketball is stockpiling a lot of good players.
Grant Ramey of GoVols 24/7 joining me now. What do you know about his game, his play style, offensively, defensively, and how does his style of play fit in with what Rick Barnes wants to do at Tennessee?
He's 6'5", he's 190, so he's physically well-built for a kid his age. Long arms, athletic, he's a physical wing. A really good defender, versatile defender, can guard multiple positions. Got a little bit of Josiah Jordan James in him in terms of build in his game. He might have a little bit of Eve Pons in him in terms of his defensive versatility. The offense is where he needs to keep developing a little bit, develop his jump shot some more. He can score, you know, slashing to the basket, and he can score in transition, which is something that Rick Barnes wants to do a lot of, night in and night out in basketball. So that should help him. But pairing him with a five-star point guard, Kennedy Chandler, that's a really good sign of a really nice backcourt of the future to start this recruiting class.
Obviously, with Eve Pons going to be gone by the time that Meshack gets here, and you're seeing kind of two different types of players on the wing. Obviously, there's a lot of athleticism, but is it any different when a coach has to kind of adjust to different personnel from different recruiting classes coming in to fit the appropriate scheme so that his team can have success?
Yeah, I think so. I think this is, you know, Rick Barnes does a good job identifying versatility and identifying the physical traits, I guess, that he wants in a basketball player. Basically, if you have the foundation that he's looking for, he feels like he can develop the other parts of your game that might need that development that can kind of take you to the next level. Grant Williams obviously wasn't the most physical guy in the world, but he was pretty polished and a pretty creative scorer. And Rick Barnes felt like he could take advantage of some of that and develop it further. You look at Eve Pons, you look at other guys down the line, Jordan Bone, that they've kind of come in and they've had certain physical traits, and Rick Barnes has worked on developing the other stuff that they need. So I think right there on the wing with guys like Josiah, with Eve, with now Jemima Meshack, you want that long athleticism, athletic ability, versatility defensively, and then you kind of develop games from there.
What do you think Tennessee is going to continue to do with the rest of this recruiting class? What sort of positions are they going to be targeting? Obviously, Paolo Banchero has kind of made his commitment decision already, but where else is Tennessee going to be looking for the rest of the 2021 class?
Well, you got to look in the paint. They got to add some big men now that they've added two really nice guards to start this class. You look at this 2021 roster. John Fulkerson's a senior. Eve Pons a senior. EJ Anasicki, the graduate transfer from Sacred Heart, he'll be a senior as well. So those guys are gone in the 21-22 roster, and you got to supply some big men. Obviously Paolo Banchero. I took a little bit of everybody by surprise when he was committed to Duke, just based on nobody really expected the decision that soon. But on the heels of him, they're chasing Jabari Smith, the five-star power forward out of Tyrone, Georgia, top five player in the class. They've had some recent buzz with Ryan Mutombo out of Atlanta, 6'11 center, the son of Dikembe Mutombo, who previously was considered a Georgetown lead, obviously because of his dad and the legacy he has in that program. And Chuck Bediako is another one, if I'm not mistaken, that Tennessee's in on. Charles Bediako, five-star center. With Canadian roots, and obviously Tennessee's had some success. Rick Barnes and his staff has to go into Canada and get some players. So, kind of find a big man or a couple big men, best case scenario, to fit with these guards.
Grant Ramey of GoVols 24/7 joining me now. So, Grant, early season predictions. Obviously, we're still trying to figure out a timeline for the upcoming season. What is the latest on the start of the college basketball season? We're still waiting for a decision sometime next week from the NCAA. Are you hearing anything leaning one way or the other about the upcoming season?
I wouldn't be stunned if it's pushed back a couple weeks, like late November, last week of November. That would obviously not be great for Tennessee because they have a really big, you know, kind of marquee season opener scheduled for November 11th at Wisconsin. Tennessee's a top 15 team in most preseason projections. I think Wisconsin's closer to a top 10 team in most preseason projections. I'm sure Tennessee would want to play Wisconsin again after Wisconsin came to Knoxville and handled them really pretty easily last year at Thompson Bowling Arena when Tennessee was reeling a little bit. So I don't know. With basketball, I think you have the advantage. You can push it back a couple weeks at least. Or you could just push it all the way back to New Year's if you had to, just play conference schedules and then figure out the postseason from there. Because whatever you have to do to save March Madness and to have an NCAA tournament, just because you can't possibly miss out on it 2 years in a row.
Does it appear that the NCAA is embracing the idea of a bubble for the NCAA tournament or even portions of the regular season?
I think so. I think there's a lot of buzz about trying to move the Maui Invitational somewhere in the United States, trying to move the Bahamas tournament somewhere in the United States. Rick Barnes has mentioned possibly Orlando, similar to how the NBA bubble has worked. I don't really know how it works when you're talking about student athletes and these college basketball players and how you get them in a bubble and continue with their academics and all that stuff, maybe move everything online. I don't really know all the logistics from that side of it, but yeah, there's definitely a ton of talk of moving a lot of these non-conference tournaments, even the one that Tennessee's in, the Charleston Classic, the week before Thanksgiving, and trying to have some kind of bubble format so they can get games played.
Have we heard anything about the logistics for the 350-team NCAA tournament this year?
I don't know how in the world that even begins to work out. I mean, you have to basically start, I think we'd have to start playing that tournament around New Year's at least to get that many games in, rounds in. I don't know. It's a great idea in theory from the ACC coaches, and they've been kind of unanimously putting out their statements about how they support that. But I really, unless they have a plan to go with these statements, I don't really know how you would make that work because that's so many teams.
Yeah, what is happening here? We've got 15 grown men deciding, yeah, we're going to have a 350-team NCAA Division I men's basketball tournament coming up this March.
And it just came out of nowhere. And I don't know how. I mean, surely they have some idea of how this would be formatted, because I don't understand otherwise why you would just throw it out there. Like, I'm all for finding ways to make the tournament work. I just don't understand how you're going to make it work in this format, not to mention how many contracts for head coaches have bonus clauses for making an NCAA tournament. Do you count it just because you showed up? I mean, I don't know how it works, but if they can find a way, more power to them, because I think we're all starving for postseason basketball after what happened 6 months ago.
Yeah, my concern goes out to guys like Joe Lunardi and Jerry Palm. How do you accurately seed a tournament of that size, especially if you don't have any non-conference games?
I don't know. And the physical logistics of it, how you get all these teams from different parts of the country where they need to be and playing who they need to play. I assume most of it would be regional. I don't know. It's an interesting endeavor, obviously, to think about. But I would say it's a lot more fun to think about than try to actually produce and make happen.
He's Grant Ramey of GoVols 24/7. Grant, what else do you have on the site for everybody that's tuning in right now? What else can folks find at GoVols 24/7?
It's a fun time after the last few months of trying to keep ourselves busy. We actually have college football. It's actually started back. Tennessee's a little more than 2 weeks away from their scheduled kickoff at South Carolina. Obviously, it's going to be a really interesting next few months trying to watch what kind of football season play out and how that happens. And basketball as well. Recruiting's, they just kind of keep rolling along. It's the third straight class where they've had a lot of recruiting momentum in this 21 rock of the city for Tennessee basketball to be one of the most elite, athletic, whatever roster, however you want to describe it. They should be a really, really good basketball team. So it's a fun time. We can do 2 months for the next 2 months for $1. If anybody wants to sign up, we encourage you to give us a try.
And that's at GoVols247. He's Grant Ramey, at Grant Ramey on Twitter is where you can follow him as well. Really appreciate the time, Grant.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Really appreciate Grant Ramey of GoVols247 for joining me on the Behind the Arc podcast, and thank you for listening as well. CBS Sports' Matt Norlander reported that, according to some documents obtained by CBS Sports earlier this week, that a couple, if not more, of mid-season basketball tournament events could be moving their events to be played in Connecticut at the Mohegan Sun Resort and Casino, where it has hosted some tournaments in the past, but the tournaments like the Hall of Fame Tip-Off Tournament, the Hall of Fame Invitational, the Gotham Classic, the Empire Classic, and the Legends Classic all could potentially be, or at least some of them, could be moving their tournaments to the Mohegan Sun in Connecticut in order to make some non-conference games happen. So it wouldn't necessarily be played in a tournament format. The idea is that the format would be 16 teams separated into different pools that would play on different days, and so each team would get 4 non-conference games over the course of about a week. So you would play every other day. You would have regular testing. You'd be tested about 4 times during the week that you're there, and the resort and facility has 7 different locker rooms, so there's plenty of space to be able to move teams in and out while sanitizing, allow teams to use different locker rooms, and giving teams an opportunity to be able to get some big non-conference games under their belts. In the Empire's Classic, the teams that were supposed to play were Baylor, Michigan, NC State, and Villanova. So Baylor and Villanova, you're talking about 2 of the top 3 teams in college basketball for the upcoming year. The Gotham Classic, Green Bay, Jacksonville State, Iona, LSU, Mercer, Stony Brook, and Syracuse. So a couple of power conference teams. The Legends Classic, UConn, Eastern Washington, High Point, Liberty, Monmouth, Notre Dame, USC, and Vanderbilt. There's another SEC team. The Tip-Off Classic, Albany, Lehigh, LIU, Marquette, Minnesota, Quinnipiac, Rhode Island, UCF, the Invitational Army, Florida, Georgia Tech, Penn State, Purdue, Siena, Stanford, West Virginia. So a handful of power conference teams and some highly regarded power conference teams in that group. And it would not necessarily be limited to 16 teams out of that grouping, but those are simply the teams that have some midseason tournaments that are scheduled to be played as of now. Again, the decision is upcoming, expected about September 16th for when the season will start, if the start of the season needs to be pushed back. And of course, you already have some conferences that have said, we're not doing anything until January. The Pac-12 could revisit that after it suspended its fall football season. It also suspended the rest of fall sports. Now, the problem is that the Pac-12 conference has about half of its locations where local regulations are not permitting it to practice. So that could affect the men's and women's basketball seasons as well. But this is an opportunity to get some non-conference games in. And I've emphasized this, as Ken Pomeroy has already said, you cannot accurately have an NCAA tournament with the proper metrics without having some fashion of a non-conference season. Sure, Gonzaga is going to be one of the top 3 teams in college basketball, but if Gonzaga is only playing against St. Mary's, BYU, and then the rest of the teams in the West Coast Conference, is it really going to be an accurate representation when it runs the table in the WCC the same way that if Baylor is able to run the Big 12 or if Villanova is able to run the Big East? Well, which one's going to look more impressive? It's going to be Baylor and Villanova by a landslide. And St. Mary's and BYU, by the way, expecting those teams to take a step back. I don't know how good the WCC is going to be after Gonzaga. It had 3 really good teams last year, and it had a couple of other teams that could play spoiler. They weren't going to make the NCAA tournament, but the WCC was a 3-bid league last year. And this year, I don't know if you can say that with the personnel that both those teams are losing. St. Mary's finds a way to be well-coached every year. BYU, I thought Mark Pope did a really good job in year 1, but he is losing some really important talent, in especially in the backcourt. So for Gonzaga, how does it build its resume when it doesn't have the opportunity to go do that? So I think for what Norlander is reporting here, it's the opportunity to get some other bubble mid-season tournaments, not even in a tournament format, just getting teams to be able to have non-conference games. And Norlander actually went ahead and wrote a column earlier this week for CBS Sports. You can check it out on CBSSports.com, suggesting that the entire non-conference schedule just be played in tournaments. Do brackets. Get teams in bubbles in different regions and have them play non-conference games against one another. And that's been thrown out by a number of analysts from across the country, from different media outlets. And I would endorse that personally. If you can get Tennessee to go to Nashville with all the Division I schools that are in that area, and go ahead and throw Vanderbilt in there and have some other local area schools in the Ohio Valley and the Ozarks and wherever. If you need another SEC team there, fine. Maybe it's a little different, but get those teams in there. Get Memphis and Tennessee to meet in Nashville, because right now it's going to be really tough to pull a non-conference schedule together if certain leagues aren't willing to have non-conference games, and you can't just simply go traveling from campus to campus like you can in a normal season. It doesn't appear to be that way as of now anyway. So the bubble approach might not be a bad idea. You get four games in a week, you go home, you quarantine for 2 weeks, you get four games in another week. Well, you've played eight games in the span of about a month. That's not too much different than what you would normally do in a non-conference college basketball season. And so maybe you're not playing a full 30 to 35 game schedule, but you might be able to get something. And I think the NCAA really needs to consider what Norlander is writing here and look into it. I appreciate you checking out the Behind the Arc podcast. Again, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, 99.1thesportsanimal.com, and the Sports Animal app, brought to you by Big Kahuna Wings, the wings that changed it all. Please, on Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star review and hit that subscribe button and tell a college basketball fan you know about it as well. Also, if you follow our work at the Sports Animal, there's still a couple days left up until Friday, September 11th, where you can go to joshwardhunger.com and donate to the Action Hero Food Drive to help fight hunger in East Tennessee. That's through Second Harvest Food Bank of East Tennessee. So you can help Josh Ward, the hunger action hero from our station here, the Sports Animal. You go to joshwardhunger.com, you click on the donate button. Josh has goals that he's trying to reach, and he's doing really well on the leaderboard. He's atop the leaderboard. The problem is that Second Harvest Food Bank of East Tennessee as a whole is a little behind on its overall goal. So they're trying to catch up to that. So please check out joshwardhunger.com and find out how you can donate to Second Harvest Food Bank of East Tennessee and help fight hunger in East Tennessee. Thanks again for checking out the Behind the Arc podcast. Thanks to Grant Ramey for joining me. And thank you for listening. It's been the Behind the Arc podcast.
Behind the Arc with Joel Silverberg on The Sports Animal.